Mary Sterrett on True Talk 800 AM.
Welcome this afternoon. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sterrett, and today we continue our week-long series on issues affecting women incarcerated in Oregon. There are 672 women at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville, not to mention the other women who are now being housed at various county jails. On Monday, if you remember, we talked about custodial rape, and we listened to an inmate story, a woman who was assaulted by a DOC employee. Matter of fact, we should mention that this man who raped her repeatedly during the year 1997 is now still employed by the Department of Corrections. On Tuesday, we talked to battered women, and we found out why battered women ultimately, in many cases, in some cases, kill. And today, we're going to discuss those incarcerated for committing acts of violence while taking prescription antidepressant drugs. According to published literature, there is just case after case after case, suicide, violence, other criminal acts, when people have either withdrawn from these drugs or continue to take them. We're going to be hearing from a noted attorney who filed a suit against a pharmaceutical company for this particular situation over the effects of one antidepressant. We'll talk to a doctor, a psychiatrist, who is a pioneer in this field. A noted psychiatrist will tell us why. He's now devoting most of his time to testifying as an expert witness on behalf of people who've been accused of violent crimes while taking antidepressants. We're also going to listen to a correspondent who specializes in those who are wrongly convicted. But I wanted you to listen to a woman. Here is a woman that I met with repeatedly in prison over the summer, over the last few months. A woman who, a mother of three, lived in Salem, convicted of murder, sentenced to 25 years. Was shooting her husband after being on the drug Paxil for 2 weeks. We talked to her at the Oregon Women's Prison, the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville. Joining us now from Coffee Creek Correctional Facility is Suzanne Miles. Suzanne, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Tell us what happened on February 29th, 2000.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. On February 29th, I had been taking the antidepressant Paxil for approximately 11 days. I was not feeling myself. I was feeling extremely suicidal. I had received a phone call from my husband, Matt, who stated we were going through a trial separation. He had called and said that he wanted, he had decided he was going to talk to an attorney and he wanted a divorce. We had already planned on having a separation. I had a realtor. I was already had a pre-approved loan for a home. I have three daughters. This should not have happened. I had already had a gun. I had been thinking about suicide for about 3 days prior to February 29th. I had not been a suicidal person in my life. The strange thing about this Paxil was that it was so, the effects were so confusing to me that I couldn't see how confused I was. I had the gun out in the car the night before, and I was trying to figure out how to load this gun so that I could shoot myself in front of my husband, which in itself is a delusional thought. On the 29th, after I had seen Matt at our in our driveway, I went to his work, and during this delusion, when I was walking in there, I was thinking I was going to shoot myself in front of him. And the final outcome of that was that I shot him, and then when I tried to shoot myself, the gun jammed, and I sort of came back out of this confused state of mind, and I saw him laying on the floor, and I kind of I didn't realize what was really going on, and I was panicking, and then I got in the car. I left his work, and I went and got in my car, and I drove to the police and asked them to help him. I just didn't even understand what was going on. I was put in a room and questioned by some police officers. They told me, they gave me a phone book and let me call an attorney. I called an attorney to talk to her. Her her statement was that I was just rambling on. I was very confused. I called my daycare lady. She said that I was making no sense on the phone. I was just in a very confused state of mind. It seemed like it was a dream. It just really didn't seem real at all. Unfortunately, Matt ended up passing away about 4 hours later that evening. And I have been incarcerated ever since. I tried to tell my attorney about what this Paxil had done to me. He did a little bit of research on it. My sister did a lot of research for me and sent me a lot of stuff while I was in the jail. And I realized that is what had happened. That's what had happened to me. All these horrible side effects that people had been having, that was what was happening to me that day.
Suzanne, tell me a little bit about before you actually committed this murder. Before that happened, what were you thinking? What were the side effects? Were you having violent thoughts? Were you having thoughts of suicide?
I was at work that day. I mean, I was trying to still, yeah, this was a Tuesday that this happened. So I had been at work on Monday, not very productive. I had been having extremely violent, bizarre nightmares for about 4 days. Just very bloody visual things about me cutting up myself, shooting myself. And when I was at work that day, I can remember sitting at my desk and I wasn't able to focus. And all I could think about was that I needed to go and I needed to shoot myself. That was what the vision was, and it wasn't so that I could understand that it was so bizarre. It just seemed like it was a normal thought. I couldn't even see that it was bizarre.
Let me just ask you, if before you were taking this antidepressant, you had ever had any kind of side effects where you had these bloody, violent thoughts and dreams?
No, never before in my life, no.
And you were taking this drug for how long?
I began taking it on Valentine's Day, February 14th of 2000.
Was this ever something you were allowed to enter into evidence?
It was not. We had an evidentiary hearing on December 17th of 1999 in front of the judge that was my trial judge. He listened to the evidence, listened to the doctors state their facts about this. The DA was allowed to cross-examine him. She pretty much played it up as a joke and said, oh, sure, the Paxil made her do it. You know, she was very flippant about it. The judge eventually came to a decision, which was like about one page long, and he decided that it was junk science. He didn't believe it. He didn't understand it. He didn't think that it had any of the effects that I was saying that I had been feeling or that the doctors were saying could possibly happen, these LSD-type effects on your mind. So he did not allow that as evidence in my trial. It was disregarded each time that it was brought up in the trial. It was squashed. I think they tried to just play it as I was using it as an excuse. But
you had no criminal background, no violence in your past. You've never committed a crime. This was the first time, the first and only time, 14 days or 11 days after you began taking this drug.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you describe, Suzanne, what your life was like before this incident?
We had a home. I had a job. I worked at Salem Hospital. I had three great kids. Just a normal life. We had a dog, had fish. So Matt and I went to marriage counseling a few times. He only went twice with me, which none of those records would be released for my trial either for what he was saying. They were not allowed as evidence. But the woman that I saw in the counseling, which was through my work, had suggested that I take an antidepressant. She said that I was depressed. And so that's how I ended up taking that. I was not monitored at all during the time that I took it. She told me to take this the day of February 14th. I began taking those pills the way she told me to, half a tablet, and then gradually increase my dosage, which I had taken two pills the night before the shooting. they told me to take those pills, and then she went on vacation. I had an appointment with her on March 6th of 2000, which would have been 6 days after the shooting. But nobody asked me how I was feeling. Nobody really cared. They just gave me the medication and said, take it.
So you were not prescribed this by a doctor. This was a counselor?
Actually, the medication was prescribed to me by an OBGYN. And when I saw the counselor, she had said that she wanted to prescribe me something. She was a mental health nurse practitioner counselor. And I said, well, I already have this bottle of Paxil that I got filled about 3 weeks before that. And I hadn't taken any of it. I didn't want to take an antidepressant. I just didn't want to take it. And so I already had that prescribed. So she said, well, since you've had that and you've paid your $60 minus your co-payment, go ahead and take this. So that's how I began taking it.
In the time since you've been incarcerated, what have you found out about this drug?
I have found out a lot about this. My sister searched the internet when this first happened. I didn't get to talk to my family for 10 days after I was incarcerated. I was on suicide watch for the first 8 days that I was in Marion County Jail. And I didn't have any contact with anybody but the officers and the nurses. They insisted that I take more antidepressants before I could be allowed in the general population. And when I finally got out of the suicide watch, I was allowed to call my sister, and I talked to her, and I just remember crying to her on the phone, saying that I didn't know what had happened, and that they had told me that Matt was dead, and I just didn't understand how that had happened. And she told me that you're just not going to believe what I found on the internet. And then she began sending me all kinds of literature and books written by people, Dr. Ann Blake Tracy and Dr. Peter Bragan. Just horror stories about people who had taken this and had not had any kind of, had had the psychiatric disorder of depression, which is not a violent issue at all. Depressed people are very passive. But when you take these drugs, it alters your thinking so much that you can't control your impulses. You can't control your thinking. And your thinking is very distorted.
All right, Suzanne, let's take a break and then come back and continue the story of what happened. Our guest this afternoon, Suzanne Miles, she's incarcerated at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, which is the women's prison in Wilsonville, the only women's facility in the state of Oregon. We're going to continue our discussion and find out just how this was not allowed to be admitted into the evidence in this case at all. Back right after this.
you given any more thought to increasing your RQ?
Now, look, not that I don't do okay in that department myself. It had occurred to me, you know, if I were to make a little trip out.
A little trip up to the appliance center of Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell to check out the 28 different gas fireplaces actually in operation is the perfect way to increase your RQ.
Romantic quotient?
Yes.
You say those gas fireplaces have the same impact as a romantic cruise?
Hey, that's it. Plus, not only does the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas have 28 working fireplaces on display and all sorts of inserts and gas logs, Lanny has the most knowledgeable customer service people in the business. And the best installers, too. But they do get busy around this time of year. So if you're going to up the old RQ...
Yeah. Go out to the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell.
True Talk, your station for Lou Davies. Weekdays at noon on True Talk 800 AM.
From Image Enhancement Center. Carolyn, you've had years of experience in using lasers for permanent hair removal. Now you have a new laser that you're excited about.
I sure am. It comes from Denmark, where we've been using it over there for over 5 years. It's revolutionary, a very top-of-the-line laser. There are only 4 places in the United States currently using it. It works on any color of hair or skin, and the unique thing about it is that it works in a cool instead of hot application. You know, I've had people come to Image Enhancement Center because they've been to other clinics and experienced some discomfort. All of our treatments are done by registered nurses, and we have clients right now coming from Alaska, San Francisco, Seattle, and even New Zealand.
Image Enhancement Center, just off I-205 at Mill Plain at 124th, just 10 minutes north of the airport. Call 360-944-1100. Get rid of that unwanted hair privately at Image Enhancement Center.
At Image Enhancement Center, let me pay for your last day.
Welcome back. This afternoon, our guest is Suzanne Miles. She's incarcerated at the women's prison in Wilsonville, Oregon, at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. And she told us that on February 29th, the year 2000, after taking the antidepressant Paxil for 11 days, after several days of violent ideation, thoughts of suicide, a woman with no criminal background, no violent behavior in her past, got a gun at a pawn shop and went and shot her husband. Her husband died 4 hours later. She has been sentenced to prison.
This call may be monitored or recorded.
All right, that's the breaking in from the prison. Of course, they're listening in at any point in time. Anyway, pick it up from there, Suzanne. You were sentenced to how long?
To a minimum of 300 months, so 25 years.
25 years. No hope of getting out any earlier. Is there a chance of an appeal?
My attorney has filed an appeal for me. I don't know. He hasn't even begun working on my case. He said it could be up to a year before he works on it. His statement to me is that he doesn't know anything about the Paxil, and he would do some research on that, that even my trial attorney thought it was kind of pokey. He just didn't want to believe it either. But, I mean, there's case after case after case of these just nutty things people are doing when it's completely out of character. I mean, I have 3 beautiful daughters. They're great people. I've done a great job being their mom, and all of a sudden, I'm taken away from them. My youngest daughter sent to Virginia to be raised by my brother and sister-in-law. So she's separated from her sisters. I mean, it's torn our family apart, and that's what I keep reading time after time after time. These drugs are destroying families. It's been very difficult, although I think I'm coping rather well. I have support of my family and my friends.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
All right. Are you going to be able to talk to us further after this?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go inside now. I was outside, so I'm going to go in on the other phone.
All right.
I'm in right now.
All right. Go ahead and then call us back, all
okay.
right?
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi there, Suzanne. All right. You were out in the yard for our earlier conversation. You had to go back inside, correct?
That's right.
Tell me what the phone situation is as far as talking to us. We know that it's being monitored, but what are your phone privileges?
Well, I am housed in a honor dorm right now, supposed to be for people who are not in trouble and respect the surroundings of the officers and do what we're told to do, which is basically what I do. I don't get into any trouble in here. So we have a podium with five phones, and we have access to that phone from 5:30 a.m. until 10 at night, except during meal time. So that's pretty good. We have there are also five phones outside. That's what I was talking about earlier.
Can you tell me a little bit about the conditions revolving around privacy issues? I know that I have come to visit you at the prison, and you have told me that after we leave the visiting area and I go my way and you go your way, you are oftentimes everybody's searched, but there are strip searches, random strip searches for women coming and going. Can you describe those for us?
They're very humiliating. The workforce that I work at, there are randomly three people picked per day to be strip searched. You go in a little room with a female officer, take your clothes off, shake them out, lift your breasts, lift your arms, flip your hair over, bend over and cough twice, spreading your teeth. It's very humiliating. Very humiliating. I've never experienced anything like it until I came to jail.
What about the presence of male guards? What is that? How does that factor into your comfort level or what the whole environment is like? Try to speak up if you can, because we're having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. We have a few male guards that work in the dorm area. There's a lot of male of the upper rank, sergeants and lieutenants. But we do have male guards that work here in the community. They walk around, patrol your bed area every 15 minutes. So the person never gets to be protected because there's always somebody right there wandering around, flashlight, speech of reading. Some of the inmates, I think, inappropriately act with some of the guards also. Their behavior sometimes really distressing. I think if you're a pet in here, you get better privileges, you get to do more things. I guess it's kind of like anywhere. People pick their favorites and then they do what they will with them.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, if I round nose or, pussy face up to somebody in a higher rank or an officer, then I can get more time off my bunk. I can wander the halls more. I can have a special birthday party in another pod if I want to. That's happened recently. Kind of upset a lot of us in here. One woman was allowed to come back to this dorm after she already moved out so she could have a birthday party. That wouldn't happen for 90% of the women here.
What about the food? Describe what it is you're given to eat.
The food is awful here. The food is awful. Lots of starch, lots of supposedly to eat, but I don't know what kind of food. Not very. We had bugs in our cereal the other day, in our granola that they gave us for breakfast. There were beetles in it. The food is not very healthy. I don't think it helps anybody in here at all. People that are not very healthy are becoming more unhealthy because of the diet in here. You can choose to get a vegetarian tray, which is most days my option. Beans and rice and some vegetables. And then the canteen is a whole other list of junk food. There's really nothing healthy on there that we could buy.
When I was in there the other night, I had some tokens, which is what you need to get if you want to buy anything from the vending machines while you're visiting an inmate. And I had some tokens, and all you wanted was a bottle of water. You wanted bottled water. Is the water there so awful?
Yes, the water smells bad and tastes bad. One of the inmates here wrote to the governor's office to request that it be tested we got a statement back from the governor's office, his assistant, that said that the water here was fine. We were drinking the same water as the Wilsonville residents. I don't believe that's true, because the water is so bad. And it said that the staff here was also drinking the same water that we as inmates were drinking. That I haven't seen yet. They bring in their own bottled water. Even my bosses at my state job in the penitentiary here, they bring in their own water. They don't drink the water that we drink.
What would you say to people who, again, have no idea what the environment is like? What is it that you would want them to know?
I would want them to know that it's extremely oppressive.
This call may be monitored or recorded.
I think their idea of our having any kind of activity is a tainting. It's just not the thing to do. Makes a lot of lazy, depressed people around here. The environment here is very oppressive. There's a lot of different kinds of personalities here. A lot of people that could be intimidating and infringe on your space. It's just not a very healthy environment, either physically or mentally, for any of the women in here.
All right. Suzanne, we know that our time is short with you, so we are going to let you go and say goodbye.
Okay.
And know that you'll be in our thoughts and in our prayers. We'll continue to discuss this case and other cases like yours. Suzanne Miles, thanks. God bless.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we're going to talk to an attorney who has been instrumental in filing lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies. For instance, the pharmaceutical company that makes Paxil. He's going to tell us why this is a bona fide defense and why he's been successful in the past. And we'll also hear from Dr. Peter Bregan coming up at the top of the hour, who will tell us why he has pretty much limited his practice to just being an expert witness to try to bring this to the attention of the media and the courts. So do stay with us here on True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sterrett. We'll be right back.
Last year, Northwest Medical Teams provided aid and Christian compassion to more than 2 million people. Helpless children in overcrowded orphanages. Families ravaged by war and earthquakes. Hurting people here at home and abroad.
You can be a part of this local effort to change the world by attending Northwest Medical Teams' Doors of Hope Banquet October 5th at the Portland Expo Center. Join the celebration with True Talk 800 AM and recording artist Debbie Boone and TV personality Grant Goody for an inspiring evening. Call Northwest Medical Teams today for tickets. It's only $40 and includes a free ticket to the Home and Garden Show at the Portland Expo. Call 503-624-1000 for tickets. That's 624-1000.
Don't forget to experience the life-changing work of Northwest Medical Teams at Windows of Need, Doors of Hope. A free multi-sensory exhibit running October 2nd through 8th only at the Portland Expo Center.
True Talk, local live talk radio. Every weekday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., it's True Talk 800 a.m.
My name is Mike Jones, and this is a true story. Several years ago, my doctor told me I should have my colon soaked. I can't say I was excited about a 5-foot tube going through my insides, but hey, I was in my 50s at the time, so I did it. My colon turned out to be okay, and afterwards I asked my doctor, "So, when's the last time you had one of these?" He hung his head. He hadn't. Tragically, last year, my doctor died of colon cancer. Did you know if you're over age 50, you're at risk for colon cancer too? And if you never had your colon checked because you're afraid of the procedure, I have good news. It's now possible to get a virtual colonoscopy with BodyView's revolutionary new CAT scan. A virtual colonoscopy is still a colonoscopy, but without the invasive scope, and no anesthetic either. I just had one at BodyView scanning. It was totally comfortable, took just a few minutes, gave me some peace of mind too. So if you're over 50, younger if you have a family history, call BodyView scanning at 503-653-SCAN for more information. That number again, 503-653-SCAN.
Charter member of the vast right-wing conspiracy, Mary Sterrett. True Talk 800 AM.
Welcome Welcome back. This afternoon, we continue our look at women's prison issues. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. We just heard the tragic story of a woman who was sentenced to 25 years in prison. She had been taking the antidepressant Paxil for 11 days, and she had, as she described, these bloody nightmares, and she described an enormous difference in her behavior. She went to a pawn shop, and she purchased a gun. She had the intention of shooting herself in front of her husband. She went to his place of business, and she shot him. He died 4 hours later, and this woman, a woman who was a mother of three, worked in a hospital in Salem, just a normal, run-of-the-mill, average American woman, wound up, because of the effects, she says, of this particular drug, wound up going into a certain set of behaviors that she had never, never experienced before. She tried to bring this into evidence. She tried to have this entered into evidence during her trial, but she was told it wasn't going to happen. She was told it was junk science. Well, I have in front of me reports, published information, that talks about lawsuit after lawsuit. There's one particular lawsuit in California against GlaxoSmithKline, which charged the drug company with failing to warn the public about the dangers of Paxil withdrawal. Now, this is the manufacturer of this antidepressant, which is among the antidepressants, which include Prozac and Zoloft, Selexa, and Luvox. And so there is precedence for this. This woman's very, very sad story, in my estimation, of being wrongly convicted because of this particular drug. I think the legal term is involuntary intoxication. But joining us now is an attorney from California, from San Rafael, who is one of those who filed suit against the pharmaceutical company. So this is not junk science. And perhaps like other people who've been imprisoned for the violent behavior that is subsequent to many cases taking this drug, that she's been wrongly convicted. Mr. Don Farber, attorney joining us from California. Nice to have you with us, Mr. Farber. Her judge dismissed this. She wanted to bring into evidence the fact that she'd taken this drug for 11 days and had no violent behavior or activity in the past, wanted to bring this into evidence, and the judge said this is junk science. There's nothing to show that these antidepressants would cause this behavior. But you would disagree, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. The junk science is performed by industry when these drugs are approved, and it goes way back to the regulatory process. And talk about junk science. Scientists traditionally, to be a scientist, has to subject his or her findings to outside scrutiny. Now, in the case of clearing these drugs for market use, their methodology has been cleared by the FDA and various scientists, but their data has not. There's considerable inconsistencies in the data, and until these companies are willing to release all the data and let other scientists and external people examine it, as far as I'm concerned, that's junk science. So this is very important, and it's a very serious problem, the inadequacy of these drugs labeled, because the physicians are not aware of the risk when they prescribe the drugs.
How did you become aware of this entire class of crimes as a result of these antidepressants?
Did you say crimes?
Crimes.
Yeah, I'm not a criminal lawyer, so I can talk generally about the subject, but I've been engaged in civil litigation with the drug companies for about 4 years, and I have had occasion in discovery to look at the books and go in and see records that the general public and even the FDA have not seen. And there's a lot of inconsistencies in the data. And amazingly, as these tests are conducted and various adverse events are recorded, by the time this data gets to the FDA panel to vote on the drug is amazingly safer. A lot of these adverse events go away. And I think a little sunshine on this process would be very beneficial.
You filed a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline, major, major pharmaceutical company. You charged the company with what?
Well, we charged them with fraud all the way down. misrepresentation, violation of express and implied warranties. And in my case, we basically filed two types of cases. One is the suicide or violence element, which you're talking here in the criminal context, and also the matter of addiction and habit-forming characters of the drug. So basically, in each of those areas, the company and the FDA, I might add, have been less than forthcoming in getting these drug labels accurate to reflect the actual experiences in the clinical trials. I personally don't get that upset at the company. I'm basically a salesman. What I get very upset at is the FDA's basic lack of objectivity on this. They're, in my opinion, much too biased, if you will, in favor of the drug company. These warnings have to be significantly upgraded.
How can you possibly warn enough against something we're seeing the effects? We just talked to a woman who's been convicted of murder, sentenced to 25 years, wasn't even allowed to enter this inn if she'd taken this drug. How much of a warning can you put on a package insert and expect that to make any difference? Can we say, don't take this, you might kill somebody?
Well, that's a good question. I have had physicians in the past. I agree you can overwarn. Goodness, in many areas of our life, we get so many warnings on our airbags and sidewalks. We have warnings coming out the ears. And I agree, too much warning is effectively no warning. But on this particular drug, and this class of drugs, we can start out by telling the truth. In the Paxil label, for example, you won't see a suicide warning. Instead, they'll hide it in the small print, and instead of seeing suicide at a frequent rate, you're going to see the term emotional lability. In other words, that's a fancy medical term for depression. So we can start out by telling the truth, and let the labels be accurate, and let the physicians determine what's best for this physician based on the facts. But right now, the physicians don't have the facts. And 70% of these prescriptions for psychotropic drugs are prescribed by your GP, your primary care physician. And they don't know. I've seen case after case, suicide case after suicide case, where the doctors simply didn't know. They admitted it. So the labels have to be accurate, and pressure has to be brought on the FDA to do their job.
When you're talking about suicide, when you're talking about homicide, this is as serious as it gets. Why is there no major campaign, and I know the answer to this question, why is all of this not in the news? Why are all these cases never brought to light? And I think you know the answer as well, Don.
Well, absolutely. And as a lawyer, I can tell you. The drug companies settled these cases under the table. Settlements are confidential, and so nobody finds out about it. So the answer to that, yeah, I know I'm a lawyer, but I do have to serve my client's needs. And what the client wants, I have to basically comply. But as a citizen, I expect the FDA to do their job and to basically police these drugs and report the facts and get it out in the open and get the labels accurate.
Now, we're talking about this one woman who is not too far from us here in the Portland area. She's incarcerated. She's just a normal mom, wound up taking this drug and killing her husband. What is the remedy for her? What's her recourse at this point? I mean, she's sitting there in prison, and she's looking at serious, hard time.
You know, I wouldn't want to comment on the specific case of either the attorney or the judge. But let me tell you this. Based on what you've given me, the 10 days and the violence and the unexpected change of behavior is a classic case of violence induced by the drug. It happens frequently, ranging from bizarre behavior all the way up to violence against third parties, including murder. And basically, the information has to go before a jury or whatever, And just based on the theoretical you've given me, I would say the judge made a tremendous mistake. But that's just based on what you've provided. But someone to do this in 10 days is, to me, seems clearly a case of the drug causing the behavior. And in criminal law, you know, if you go out and kill somebody on the highway and you've been at a bar all night, the law doesn't feel sorry for you because you intentionally got drunk. But in the case of these drugs, the people don't know, the patients don't know, the physicians don't know. So this really is a case equivalent to involuntary intoxication. You know, had the family and the patient, the physician known of the drug-induced qualities of this drug, they could have monitored the patient. And that apparently was absent.
All right, let's take a short break and then come back. Our guest is attorney Don Farber, and he's very well acquainted with these types of cases and is going to tell us why, according to what he knows and he's found out, it's not junk science, despite what the judge in this Suzanne Miles case called it. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Farid. Our week-long look at women's prison issues continues. Coming up at the top of the hour, Dr. Peter Bregan will join us. He's made pretty much his life work of letting people know that these drugs can be horrifically, horrifically dangerous. Don Farber continues with us for a few more minutes right after this, so do stay with us. We have more True Talk on the way. At True Talk, we want to welcome Debbie Boone and Grant Goody to the Northwest Medical Team's Doors of Hope Banquet. That's October 5th. Come along and celebrate the work of Northwest Medical Team, which provides Christian compassion and aid to more than 2 million people every year. Call 503-624-1000 to make your reservation today for the Doors of Hope Banquet. That's 503-624-1000.
If you're overweight, you're not alone. Do something about it. Introducing Slimpact, a great new weight loss product from Europe. Slimpact is totally natural. You eat as you normally do, but with Slimpact, you feel full sooner and avoid cravings between meals. Slimpact is easy to use. Just apply one patch per day until you reach your goal. No pills, no shakes, no problem. It works. You'll see results in your first week. How does it work? It absorbs through the skin and gives you the sensation of being full. You eat less, you lose weight. No one needs to know you're using Slim Patch. Know how do you shake in the back of the fridge or gulping your pills down before lunch. Apply Slim Patch to a discreet part of your body and start losing weight right away. Don't wait any longer. Now is the time to get on the right track.
Call 888-55-PATCH. Ask how to receive a 30-day supply absolutely free with your order. Call toll-free 1-888-557-2824. Lose 12 to 20 pounds this month at 1-888-55-PATCH. That's 1-888-55-PATCH.
True Talk, local live talk radio, every weekday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. It's True Talk 800 a.m.
An elderly woman sits alone and in her eyes, vulnerability, fear. She needs someone to care for her. If you're moved to provide Christian compassion to those in need, you should consider becoming a certified nurse's assistant. The demand for certified nurse's assistants, also known as CNAs, is higher than ever and growing. CNAs can work full or part-time. So if you want to be home when the kids are, you could supplement your income by providing care for someone in the mornings. CNAs work in private homes, nursing facilities, even hospitals are hiring and providing great benefits for CNAs. Some earning as much as $16 an hour. New Care Directions, our area's number one training center, is now enrolling men and women for their October training. The training program is only $675, and payment plans are available, with some scholarships available for adults 55 and older. Day or evening classes. Call New Care Directions today at 503-231-9319 for details. 503-231-9319. New Care Directions, 503-231-9319.
Shining a light on truth, justice, and the American dream. All for 6 1/4 an hour. Mary Scarrett, True Talk 800 AM.
All this week we're taking a look at issues that affect women in prison, women incarcerated here in the state of Oregon. On Monday we talked about the fact that we are one of only four states where there is no law against custodial rape. In other words, a guard can rape a female inmate, and there is no law against it. And we talked to one woman who had such a tragedy occur, a crime occur against her, and as we pointed out, the man who committed this crime is still working for the Department of Corrections. On Tuesday, we heard about battered women and why sometimes battered women kill. Today, we heard a story of a woman named Suzanne Miles. She's incarcerated in Wilsonville at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility.
She's been sentenced to 25 years for shooting her husband. She described having taken the antidepressant Paxil for 11 days, never having had any violence before in her life. And a few days before she wound up shooting her husband, she had a series of bloody nightmares and thoughts of suicide. She wound up killing her husband, and the judge in this case just dismissed it as junk science when she said, the drug made me do it. Not considering it junk science is an attorney from California, Don Farber, who has filed lawsuits against GlaxoSmithKline, the maker of Paxil, saying that, wait a second, there's more here than meets the eye. Don, I have in front of me that lawsuit that you filed in California. It's 34 pages. What was the outcome of that?
Which lawsuit do you have in front of you?
This is a lawsuit, a complaint for relief under Business and Professional Code, request for restitution. This is...
That is a Paxil addiction case. I can't talk specifically about it. It's been dismissed, but I will say this. The issue in that case has elevated itself, and we now have a case in U.S. District Court Los Angeles on Paxil addiction. And you may have read a couple weeks ago about a judge, our judge, basically ordering GlaxoSmithKline to stop the TV ad, saying that Paxil is non-habit-forming.
Mm-hmm.
So that issue is front and center and accelerated, and we have actions going on in several states at this time. So that issue, the jury is still out on that, so to speak.
When you say that they're dismissed, is that one of these situations where you mentioned earlier where the pharmaceutical company basically says, here, take this amount of money, let's make sure this thing never winds up going any further and it doesn't make news?
Well, I can't specifically answer that the way you phrased it, but that happened. And you can probably put two and two together.
Right, right. Okay. I've got in front of me from the Center for Psychiatry and Psychology these headlines. Of course, we never read them in our newspaper. Assault charges dismissed on grounds of involuntary intoxication with psychiatric drugs. Judge shortened sentence based on testimony about psychiatric drug intoxication. Not guilty by reason of psychiatric drugs. Again, there are cases where people are being found not guilty because of this involuntary intoxication as a result of these psychiatric drugs. Is this a trend? Are we going to see this happen more?
Well, I think this particular issue has hit the civil law earlier, 10 or 12 years ago. But yes, right now in the criminal justice system, I think this issue is intensifying and it's really unresolved. This could go in different directions. And the problem in criminal law is you have so many indigent people and the public defenders involved in so many of these things, and they really don't have the money to hire the experts and investigators necessary to mount a defense. I don't want to comment on your specific case up in Oregon, but the defendant needs experts like Peter Bragan to expose this, and without that, maybe the judge up in your area just didn't have the evidence before her. But this evidence and the science has to get before the judge so he or she can make a reasoned decision. But I've had many people apply to me for criminal defense, and I frankly just don't have the time. But it's every bit as compelling an issue in criminal science, more so, I suppose, than in the civil arena.
What would you say to people who are listening to this saying, I've been on this drug for months and for years, and I know plenty of people who are on this drug. It doesn't seem to be all that bad.
Well, two things. Not that you asked, but I'm basically a libertarian Republican, and I don't believe in forcing my views on other people. If they want to take the drug, that's fine. Many people have told me that the drug helped them. Two things. They have to have an informed consent with the known risk up and down the line, and that's definitely not been the case. But for those that it does help, and in our addiction cases, going off the drug at the appropriate time has to be accompanied by very cautious titrating down of the dosage. It has to be very gradual. So many people have stated they enjoy the drug. I had a friend whose wife told me that Prozac has saved her life. My reaction to that is, fine, you're happy with Prozac, but the people that were never warned, either of the treatment emergent symptoms at the beginning of dosage or getting off the drug, were entitled to accurate labels, and we're not getting that in these SSRIs.
So as far as the labeling now, how has your suit against GlaxoSmithKline, how has that changed the labels that we now see in these drugs?
Well, the company will never admit it, nor will the FDA. But the suit we filed in San Jose in August of 2000, one you referred to a little while ago, I am virtually positive was responsible for the significant upgrade of the Paxil label in December of 2001 on the issue of quitting the drug. Now, there's much more strength and warning that patients have to get off this drug very gradually. So that's a step in the right direction. The point I want to make is it didn't happen by the FDA's unilateral action. They've known about this serious problem for 8 or 9 years, ever since the drug went on the market. There were thousands of adverse events reported to the FDA, and the scientific literature reported the same problem for 8 or 9 years. But I think it took our lawsuit to actually get the FDA going and actually issue a warning, because our case was set to go to trial, then miraculously the warning appeared.
Isn't that interesting? All right, what about the drug itself? Is there a difference in the withdrawal process and effect of Paxil as opposed to Prozac or Zoloft or Celexa or Luvox or any of those other drugs?
Good question. Of course, you're asking a lawyer, not a doctor, so with that proviso, I'll answer. Paxil is much worse than any of the rest. And as bad as Prozac is in the suicide element early in the dosage, it's fairly easy to get off. But Prozac has the longest half-life of the drugs you just mentioned, which probably makes the withdrawal symptoms more gradual. But with Paxil's one-day half-life, if you get off that drug too quickly, you're going to suffer severe and immediate withdrawal symptoms. And suicidality can become one of those symptoms. So I would say, of all those drugs, Paxil, to me, is by far the worst in terms of withdrawal and getting off the drug.
You know, John, you as an attorney, I'm sure that you'd be able to answer this question with a little more certainty than other people have. Our powers that be here have been very, very cautious about what we say on the air and have asked me to be very cautious as well when it comes to describing these particular drugs, naming names, and talking about different pharmaceutical companies. What we have said here today, anything actionable from what you've heard? I mean, I'm sitting here alleging, and you're alleging, this is a very dangerous drug. And to come on the air and say that, it seems like we could certainly be in the crosshairs of GlaxoSmithKline and Eli Lilly and any of the other pharmaceutical giants.
Let them come. I don't care. Let them sue me. Opinion is still protected by the First Amendment. And as long as that goes on, it takes people to stand up. And I've already stated that the drug may be very effective for some people. But the story has to be told. Government and all citizens have to get up and make sure the truth is known. And right now there's a lot of suppression of the facts of what happens in clinical trials on these drugs. So I do name names. We have to do that. We have to name names of drugs, people, and decisions that are made. And we have to get down to personal responsibility in our society. Until we do that, we're not going to tackle too many issues.
You say, John, that a lot of people come to you and say, help. What do you do when you hear these stories and these terrible, terrible situations of people incarcerated?
Well, on the incarceration, all I can talk is in generalities. If we have a conviction and it's on appeal, then all I can do, really, I don't want to second guess either the attorneys or the judges or anybody until I would check out a specific file. But even during the appellate procedure, there are still procedures to bring in newly discovered facts, evidence, and even law. So one never gives up. And in the case you described, it seems to me it does warrant investigation.
All righty. Well, John, I really appreciate your time. I know you're swamped, and being with us this afternoon was very helpful to our show this afternoon. John Farber, many thanks once again.
You're quite welcome.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. We're going to break here and listen to some news headlines. And when we come back, Dr. Peter Bregan will join us. Dr. Peter Bregan is the pioneer in this issue. He is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist. He's written many, many books on this issue. And he's going to answer. He pulls no punches. He's going to tell us why these drugs can be very, very dangerous, especially in light of we just heard a woman incarcerated for 25 years. Stay with us here on True Talk 800. I'm Mary Sarris.
How'd you like to polish up the morning newspaper in 30 seconds?
Pete Bissonnette goes through books at over 100,000 words a minute with the amazing photo reading system.
Photo reading is fast, faster than speed reading. I'll show you how you can mentally photograph pages at a time. So whether it's books, magazines, or even technical information, you'll absorb it as fast as you can turn the pages and remember it for years.
Try photo reading risk-free. 1-800-591-4275. 1-800-591-4275.
There are certain repairs that you want to make darn sure are done right the first time and come with a lifetime guarantee, like your Uncle Bob's pacemaker. Well, at Geico Auto Insurance, if you have an accident, we can guarantee your claim repair for as long as you own your car. We'll have you back on the road pronto. In fact, many claims are settled within 48 hours. Geico, 1-800-947-AUTO. That's 1-800-947-AUTO. Our customers like the way we handle claims, almost as much as they like saving money.
Thomason in Washington.
Who is the enemy here? The President of the United States or Saddam Hussein?
Senate Minority Leader Trent Lott reacting to Majority Leader Tom Daschle's charge that President Bush is politicizing the Iraq situation.
The President ought to apologize to Senator Inouye and every veteran who has fought in every war who is a Democrat in the United States Senate. He ought to apologize to the American people. That is wrong. We ought not politicize this war.
Mr. Bush says his chief concern is not political in nature, and he denies trying to turn Iraq into a political football.
My job is to protect the American people. It's my most important job. Most important assignment I have, and I will continue to do that regardless of the season.
White House spokesman Ari Fleischer says all involved in this debate should take a step back and take a deep breath. A rescue mission in West Africa's war-torn Ivory Coast, waving U.S. flags, dozens of American schoolchildren have been evacuated from their Christian school by French troops, their convoy of cars, and headed for an area where U.S. special forces and transport planes awaited. War games involving about 1,000 U.S. Marines just about to begin in Kuwait. The games dubbed Eager Mates.
Eager Mates is an important exercise so that the United States can display their commitment to the allies and region and also hone some of our amphibious skills.
And with all of the talk about a possible war with neighboring Iraq, one commander says the training session will take on added significance. The arrows pointing up today on Wall Street. The Dow gained about 158 points. The blue chips closing at 78.41. The NASDAQ advanced 40 points. This is SRN News.
True Talk, 800 AM, KPDQ, Portland.
This is Hugh Hewitt with today's Salem Radio Commentary. Miguel Estrada was nominated by President Bush for a seat on the Federal Court of Appeals in May of 2001. Estrada long ago received the American Bar Association's highest rating, but he has been denied a hearing for 15 long months because the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Democrat Pat Leahy, has simply refused to give him one. With broad bipartisan support, Estrada served in the Clinton Justice Department as a deputy solicitor general. Many suspect that Leahy has only one reason behind his hostage-taking of Estrada, and that's Estrada's race. As a Latino and an immigrant, Leahy is widely believed to fear that Judge Estrada might soon become Justice Estrada, a Bush nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. Miguel Estrada gets his hearing, finally, this week. All Americans, but especially those of Hispanic descent, should be watching to see if Leahy discriminates against this fine nominee on the basis of his race. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
We always appreciate your support of our advertising sponsors, and one of our longtime sponsors is the Price is Right Discount Store. I'd like to ask you to make a special point to go into the Price is Right this week, but only if you're looking for great merchandise at bargain prices. The Price is Right is a wholesale closeout store, so you're sure to find something you need at a price that's, well, just right. Everything from pantyhose, just 99 cents a pair, to tarps, tools, clothes, household items, greeting cards, and candles, even milk for $1.89 a gallon. Stop by, tell them Mary sent you, and that you appreciate the fact that they sponsor this show. Carl, the owner, is so nice, he said he'd give everyone who mentioned this ad a free pair of pantyhose with purchase. Every time I stop into the Price is Right, I always leave with a great, huge bag of cool stuff. So do me a favor, stop by the Price is Right at 12th and Division in Portland. They're open Monday through Friday from 9 to 6 and Saturday till 4. The Price is Right, and tell them Mary sent you.
Back to Mary Garrett on True Talk 800 AM.
Welcome back. This afternoon you're listening to True Talk 800 AM, and all this week we're dealing with issues related to women in prison here in Oregon. Today we're talking about one particular case, a woman by the name of Suzanne Miles, who I've met with in the course of the summer a number of times, met with her at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville, which is Oregon's only women's prison. She was sentenced to 25 years for murdering her husband. She shot him after being on the antidepressant Paxil for 11 days. This is a woman, a mom of three, worked at the hospital down in Salem. Never any criminal behavior in the past, no violent behavior. She took this and 3 days into it wound up having terrible dreams, bloody nightmares, and thoughts of suicide, and didn't understand what was going on, got a gun and went and shot her husband. Joining us now is, I think there is can be no discussion about this particular case without this gentleman. His name is Dr. Peter Bregan. You've heard me talk about his work on the program. He's joined us before, and I don't know how many people I've sent to his website, which is Bregan, BREGGIN.com. He is he's a psychiatrist, which is kind of odd to get this information from a psychiatrist, but fortunately he's pioneering in this field. Over 30 years, he has been practicing psychiatry. He has been informing the media and different professions about the biological, well, the reality of taking antidepressants and what some of these drugs can do. He's been a medical expert in many civil and criminal suits, including product liability suits against the manufacturers of psychiatric drugs. We just heard from an attorney who's worked with him in the past, Don Farber, about these particular cases. He went to Harvard College, Case Western Reserve Medical School, had a teaching fellowship at Harvard, and appointment to the National Institute of Mental Health, certainly an incredible resume. Appointment to the Johns Hopkins University Department of Counseling. And again, he's one of the people that I truly thank God for, because without his work, a lot of this information will go underneath the radar. Dr. Peter Bregan, a pleasure to have you back.
I'm very glad to be here.
We were just hearing about this case. As a matter of fact, at the beginning of the program, we had an interview with Suzanne Miles, as this woman who shot her husband after being on this drug for, 11, 12 days. Is this something that's unusual to hear?
No, I have so many cases, I probably can't count them at this point, of patients who have committed suicide or violence or just become psychotic while taking this class of drugs, the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Paxil seems to be the worst offender of the group. I have a case in New England of a young man who was taking Paxil and had just missed a dose, and who, out of the blue, attacked someone who was very dear to him. The case with Don Farber was of a man who'd taken a couple of doses of Paxil and became very disturbed, obviously, and drowned his two children and himself in a bathtub. Many criminal cases involving either Paxil or Prozac or Luvox or Celexa. This basic group of SSRIs, and so let's go through them again. It's Prozac, it's Paxil, it's Zoloft, it's Luvox, it's Celexa. Eric Harris, the shooter at Columbine High School outside of Denver, Colorado, was on Luvox for a year. The label for Luvox says that in young people, 4% develop mania on the drug, and mania is a kind of a psychosis where people can get violent, out of control, and feel godlike and omnipotent and invulnerable and do dreadful things. So we have quite a bit of evidence that these drugs can do this kind of thing. And I think they do it through a couple of different mechanisms. One, they can cause a dreadful inner aggravation or irritation called akathisia. For another, they can cause mania in a significant percentage of cases. And then they may, just through other mechanisms that we don't fully understand, be able to cause this disinhibition that people experience, so they lose control over themselves.
This one particular case is Suzanne Miles that I've been meeting with over the summer months. Talk specifically about having taken two at bedtime. She built up from a half a tablet at bedtime and then two at bedtime the night before she went and shot her husband. And so she had basically taken nine pills over 2 weeks. And the judge said, well, certainly this is these nine pills over 2 weeks couldn't have been the cause, and dispelled it as junk science that this could have been a factor in this shooting.
Well, I wasn't involved, or I think we would have got past the junk science accusation. The real junk science tends to be on the side of the drug companies. And just recently I got through a hearing, it's called a Daubert hearing, on this very issue of this Paxil cause violence. And the judge determined, yes, there was sufficient science presented at the hearing to allow this material to go before the jury. And probably we won't have to go to a jury now that the judge has made that decision. And the part of it that many doctors don't understand is that while the claim is made that it takes 4 to 6 weeks for antidepressants to have a positive effect, they often have their most serious adverse effects on day 1, 2, and 3. And when you get inside of drug companies and break down their data, as I have done, you find that many of the very worst occurrences, the agitations and anxieties and angers that develop in people, will develop after just a few doses. And it's common sense and experience. If you think about what happens to people when they have their first marijuana or their first alcohol or their first LSD, their first of any psychoactive agent, those first few exposures, the first few tablets or puffs or whatever the person is taking, often have the most dramatic effects on the brain and produce the most powerful and potentially threatening experiences. And the same is true with psychiatric drugs that impact on the brain. If you can get your most devastating impacts in the first few days. And if you go through and simply make up a list of all the adverse effects of these drugs from just the drug label and put them together in one consistent bunch, you'll find that there is quite a list. In fact, I hadn't even thought of this for the show, but I have leaning against my door 10 feet away an exhibit I'd made for one of my trials. Will you give me 2 seconds to grab it?
Yes, go grab it.
And I'll turn this exhibit around and I'll read it to you. Hang on a second.
All right, go ahead. While you do that, I wanted to point out that Dr. Bregan has written a number of books on this, talking back to Ritalin, talking back to Prozac, your drug may be your problem. And I have read them all.
Aye.
And I'm just talking about your books, Dr. Bregan. Give me a second here. I just want to... I've recommended these books to so many people because, you know, to hear the rantings of a radio talk show host saying these are bad, but when you have a Harvard-trained psychiatrist who has looked into this and who says, breaks from the ranks of his colleagues and says, this stuff is bad, and you read it in very easily understandable language, you will say, oh, dear God in heaven, anybody I know on this drug, I need to alert them. Anyway, go ahead, Dr. Bregan.
Okay. You can find material exactly like this in the Antidepressant Fact Book, which is my latest book and one of my easiest to read. The Antidepressant Fact Book just came out about a year ago. I'm looking at a great big board I've done up for some of my cases, and it's called Paxil, Mental and Behavioral Adverse Reactions in Adults Caused by Paxil, which is paroxetine. The data is taken entirely from one source, the FDA-approved label, for the drug, in this case the 2001 approved label. But when you look at the label, it's so confusing and so hard to read that you couldn't pull this out. And in my left-hand column, I have frequent, that is frequent, psychiatric adverse reactions to this drug. Mania and hypomania occur in 1% of depressed patients, and this is in the 4 to 6 week trial. These things are happening before 4 to 6 weeks are up.
Let me stop you there, doctor. If you're talking about 1% of the people who take this drug, what's an average ballpark number of people who are going to have these reactions?
That means out of every 100 who just take it under heavy supervision, one out of 100. You got a room of 100 people, which is not a very large room. Let's say I'm speaking to a room of 500. I'll say five of you would have a very severe manic hypomanic reaction.
But nationally, we're talking about perhaps hundreds of thousands of people.
Excuse me here. I got disconnected. Are you there?
Yeah, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break and then come back. So do stay with us. Our guest, Dr. Peter Breggin, go to his website, Breggin, BREGGIN.com. His latest book is the Antidepressant Fact Book. We're going to continue this as we continue our discussion here on True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sarris.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ken Frank, a medical doctor, and I know that if you truly believe there was a way to stop your snoring, you would try it. Being poked and jabbed by your mate with neither of you getting any sleep is pure torture. I know because I snored for 30 years. There is a way to stop your snoring. I created Silent Snore, now proven in medical studies to be the most potent stop snoring spray product existing. There is no product like Silent Snore. It stops or significantly reduces snoring in exactly 9 out of 10 people clinically tested. In fact, it's so effective that it's guaranteed to stop your snoring with just one spray the very first night or your money back. The reason I can guarantee this, besides how well it works for me, is that all this has been medically proven in an independent, double-blind scientific study. There is now no need to put up with another sleepless night. Go to silentsnore.net now or call and ask how you can get Silent Snore for just $19.95 per month.
Phone 1-800-850-3924. 800-850-3924. That's 1-800-850-3924.
Hi, this is Greg Andringen, General Manager of Ron Tonkin Nissan, and we are pleased to announce the grand opening of Ron Tonkin Nissan Certified Pre-Owned Outlet Store. This is a place where every vehicle will come with a warranty. You buy a 1995 Ford pickup, it has a warranty. You buy a 1991 Honda Accord, it comes with a warranty. Here's a great example of the included warranty. A 2001 Nissan Maxima certified through Nissan will come with a factory warranty for 72 months and 100,000 miles from inception date. And the great thing is this, there's no additional cost to you. There will be hundreds of vehicles available, and all vehicles have gone through a complete vehicle inspection. And you'll have the confidence of knowing that you have purchased a quality automobile. You can contact our trained sales staff at 503-788-6789. That number again is 788-6789. Ron Tonkin Nissan Certified Pre-Owned Outlet is located just one block south of Powell on 82nd Avenue. So come on down and see us, or call 788-6789.
True Talk. Weekdays at 4, it's your cultural crusader, Michael Medved, on True Talk 800 AM.
When you're not feeling well and you miss work, it may be time to get help. Penny called Dr. Bob Sklosky.
Before seeing Dr. Bob, I would get bronchitis at least 2, maybe 3 times a winter. I would get the colds and the sore throat and the ear infections. When everybody else had the bug, we had the bug too, and I lost a week's worth of work because of it. And that was when I decided I'm done. I'm ready to go see Dr. Bob. After seeing Dr. Bob, I do have more energy. I'm able to be the mom that I want to be, and I haven't been sick at all since when we first started seeing him, and it's been worth every penny.
If you or someone you love is suffering, call Dr. Bob Sklosky now at 503-654-3938. Because helping you get well is all that matters. Dr. Bob Sklosky, naturopathic physician. 503-654-3938. 654-3938.
Stirring it up in Portland. Mary Sarris, True Talk 800 AM.
Welcome back to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sarris, 318. Happy to have you here this afternoon. Day three of our look at women's prison issues. One of the cases we highlighted today was Suzanne Miles, a woman who was convicted of murder, shooting her husband, sentenced to 25 years in a women's prison at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. She'd been on the drug Paxil for less than 2 weeks, and she says that based on that, she'd never had any violent behavior, never had any criminal background, shot her husband, and as I said, is now in prison. She said she was tested by a number of doctors, and, you know, the Paxil defense was pretty much thrown out. The judge said it's junk science. Joining us now is a gentleman who knows that it's not junk science. He's Dr. Peter Bregan. He's a psychiatrist and the author of, I believe at this point, 15 books. He's got a website, Bregan, Bregin.com, and I have consulted that many times. I'm glad he's joining us this afternoon. Doctor, you had the display you were describing that you used, and you're an expert witness at some of these drug trials. What does it say?
Well, let me, I'll do this a little more quickly this time, but on the frequent column for Paxil, of psychiatric reactions caused by Paxil, at the top, mania. This is a frequent one. Mania, insomnia, nervousness, anxiety, agitation, drug dealing, confusion, central nervous system stimulation, emotional lability, which is instability, impaired concentration, amnesia, and believe it or not, depression. The antidepressants make people depressed at times. And then infrequent, which in FDA language means less than 1 in 100, but these are powerful reactions to occur even infrequently, are paranoid reaction, psychosis, hostility, euphoria, delirium, hallucinations, abnormal thinking, depersonalization, neurosis, lack of emotion, and also increased libido, which often goes along with the sexual crime. You put together hostility, psychosis, libido increased, and so on. So, and this is just in the drug label, and most of this is based on these very short, very controlled clinical trials. And in my experience, it's actually always worse when you look at the data than the drug companies present it. So I don't think we can have any doubt about whether these drugs cause serious emotional problems and serious disturbances with the potential for hostility and violence. It's more a question of did it happen in one or in a given particular case or not. The science certainly confirms that it can happen. And it also happens during withdrawal. We now have a lot of evidence that during withdrawal, from Paxil in particular, you can also get a lot of serious reactions, as well as also from Prozac and Luvox and Zoloft and Celexa, but Paxil the worst of them in that regard.
This and one particular inmate says that they did 2 crime kits on her. In other words, they collected enough blood for several different vials, but they never tested her blood for Paxil, for the drug that she attributed this crime to. And then by the time she got around to being able to get them to pay attention to this, they said they didn't have any blood left. What does this say about how they look at these types of this type of information?
Well, that's very common. There's a certain protectiveness that occurs in the criminal establishment. And by that, I don't mean the criminals. I mean those who study and guard and take care of the criminals, which is to not want to develop information that might cause us to look outside the individual into some other factors. And this is not just in this arena. I mean, if you go on to death row, as you probably know as well as anyone in the media, you'll find that most of the patients have had head injuries to begin with. And that head injuries often affect the ability people have to control their impulses and their emotions. But there's a tendency not to want to look just outside somehow of this, outside of the person as a moral being and look at the person also as a physical being who can be under the influence of various kinds of injuries and drug intoxication. Oddly enough, of course, we'll admit that alcohol will be a part of all kinds of acts of violence, and rightly we don't excuse that because if you drink, you know about what the risks are, and you're responsible for yourself. But you see, when it comes to a drug like Paxil, you don't know. You can't anticipate the kind of reactions you might have. And under the law in most states, that can be called an involuntary intoxication, an intoxication that you couldn't have predicted or understood or controlled. And we have now been successful, and I've been successful in a variety of different cases in showing judges and even criminal prosecutors the state that that people have been under the influence of an involuntary intoxication. Another group of drugs, by the way, it's not just Paxil, another group of drugs that plays a major role are the minor tranquilizers, so-called minor tranquilizers, are also called benzodiazepines, and particularly Xanax, which is a very sedative alcohol-like drug affecting the same neurotransmitter system as alcohol. And I have now got a series of cases involving the combination of Paxil and Xanax, or Paxil-like drugs and Xanax-like drugs. The combination can be deadly. And if you look again at the literature, you find a great deal in the literature and in the drug label for Xanax about disinhibition and loss of control. But once we get into the criminal justice system, you know, you have to really turn people's minds around for them to accept the science that's out there in some abundance.
How long does Paxil stay in your blood system?
Paxil is a short-acting drug, so in less than a day, you have half the life of it. And that is part of the problem, is that you can be going into withdrawal even on the day you're taking it. So if she takes it at night, by the morning or toward the evening, certainly, of the next day, she could be going into withdrawal, and she could have a mixed reaction of toxicity from the drug effect and withdrawal from the dropping of the drug level. And then the effects can far outlast when you actually take the drug and when it gets out of your system. That's another false idea that defenders of the drugs have passed onto the public, which is, well, the drug is out of their system. But everybody knows that if you have been addicted to street drugs for a year or two or three and you stop them, you don't get well the next day, even if they're out of your system, or mostly. Or someone who drinks alcohol clears very rapidly out of the system, and yet we know that if you've been afflicted by alcohol for any period of time, it can take you a long time to recover from the effects. So these drugs change the brain, and those changes can far outlast the exposure to the drug.
What does somebody like Suzanne Miles do at this point? She's sent to prison. She's had her kids taken away from her, and she sits there and says, gosh, the drug made me do it, and everyone says, yeah, right, honey.
Well, there are lawyers who will look at cases like this. One of the problems is, of course, in our society, is funding a case. But there are lawyers, particularly if there is anyone to help pay for it, and sometimes the state is required to pay for appeals, and sometimes not. But there are lawyers who can come back and say there is evidence available that wasn't presented at the trial or wasn't appreciated before the trial. But that's a legal matter, and I have no idea whether this woman has any recourse at all. But there, I certainly do know lawyers, and I can give you the names of some, who would look into a case like this if it had some opportunity for them to get their time paid.
Sure, understandable. I'll be in touch with you to try to help this woman. But what about some successes that you've had? Ever been able to get a conviction overturned?
That's the hard part, is getting a conviction overturned. We've had more success with getting the prosecution to drop the charges or change the charges to a lesser crime. I've had success in several cases involving either Paxil or similar drugs where the judges have accepted my testimony and modified the length of the prison term. And one or two cases in court where the jury has come back, actually two or three cases in court where the jury has come back with a lesser charge, not a not guilty, because people, when there's a violent crime, people don't want to say, oh, just absolutely not guilty. They'll come back with a lesser charge than, say, first-degree murder. I have less experience with going back into court afterward, and the cases that come to my mind are very few in number. We haven't been successful with it, so it's particularly tough to go back afterward.
You're spending a lot of your time, Doctor, dealing as an expert witness in these particular cases. Give me an idea of just how busy you are in terms of these particular instances.
Oh, there's just more going on in this country today in the way of drug damage than I can handle either as a clinician or as a medical expert. It's I may get a few calls a day, and certainly a few a week, about cases where people have gotten into terrible trouble as a result of being on these drugs. I'm thinking of a couple of cases of medical doctors, one a psychiatrist, one not a psychiatrist, who became manic on these SSRIs, these so-called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, this Paxil, Prozac group of drugs. So there's just a very, very large number of them. And if you look at that simple data that I gave you, that even in their own 4 to 6 week trials, 1 out of 100 people were developing mania or hypomania. It's a very dangerous condition to be developing in 1 out of 100 of your patients. That's if you're a doctor and you give it out to your patients over a few years, you're going to have a few patients who are badly hurt by just that particular phenomena. And if the person has had previous experience with getting manic or hypomanic, then it's more than double. You get over 2% of the patients for every 100. And again, these are the drug company trials. Reality is usually much worse.
Doctor, I'm so appreciative of the work that you do. I wish you could clone yourself and give us a dozen more people
right.
who are doing the work that you do. I'm going to encourage people to go to your website because there is more information on this website. You could spend days there. It's Breggin, BREGGIN.com. The latest book, one of 15 that Dr. Breggin has written, is the Antidepressant Fact Book, and I've read a number of his books, and I'll tell you what, there's a lot of information, very practical, very helpful. Most importantly, I appreciate your being with us this afternoon.
Yes, I'm very glad to be here. If you got 20 seconds, let me tell you about another problem you should look at in the jails.
Go right ahead.
A lot of patients are put on psychiatric drugs in the jails, and then they are rendered less able to organize their defense because they don't have the same motivation and clarity of thinking. And then when they go before the judge or the jury, their expressions may be flat. They may seem like they lack remorse, and they may lose sympathy, and all of that can be caused by drugs. So that's another whole group of patients that I have consulted with over the years. There have been these patients who really have had injustice done to them because while in the trial or facing the judge, they have been blunted and made to look remorseless by psychiatric drugs.
And they're handing them out like candy at the women's prison, handing them out at the men's prison, and we have that on good authority. And that, again, we put people in jail for doing drugs, and then we hand them drugs. Dr. Breggin, thank you.
You're doing great work, Mary. Great work.
You are, too. I appreciate your pointing that out. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to meet a special correspondent for the magazine Justice Denied. This is a magazine for the wrongly convicted. He'll join us to comment on the Suzanne Miles case. Stay with us here on True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sarris. We have more True Talk on the way. Listen for Lou's news at noon at the start of the Lou Davies Show. He's on the air from noon until 2 every weekday, and he debunks the ideas of the left and helps you understand the day's events. Lou Davies weekdays, noon until 2 on True Talk.
Last year, Northwest Medical Teams provided aid and Christian compassion to more than 2 million people. Helpless children in overcrowded orphanages. Families ravaged by war and earthquakes. Hurting people here at home and abroad.
You can be a part of this local effort to change the world by attending Northwest Medical Team's Doors of Hope Banquet, October 5th at the Portland Expo Center. Join the celebration with True Talk 800 AM and recording artist Debbie Boone and TV personality Grant Goody for an inspiring evening. Call Northwest Medical Teams today for tickets. It's only $40 and includes a free ticket to the Home and Garden Show at the Portland Expo. Call 503-624-1000 for tickets. That's 624-1000.
Don't forget to experience the life-changing work of Northwest Medical Team at Windows of Need, Doors of Hope, a free multi-sensory exhibit running October 2nd through 8th only at the Portland Expo Center.
So have you given any more thought to increasing your RQ?
Now, look, not that I don't do okay in that department myself. It had occurred to me, you know, if I were to make a little trip out.
A little trip up the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell to check out the 28 different gas fireplaces actually in operation is the perfect way to increase your RQ.
Romantic quotient?
Yes.
You say those gas fireplaces have the same impact as a romantic cruise?
Hey, that's it. Plus, not only does the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas have 28 working fireplaces on display and all sorts of inserts and gas logs, Lanny has the most knowledgeable customer service people in the business, and the best installers, too. But they do get busy around this time of year, so if you're going to up the old RQ...
Yeah. Go out to the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell.
Bible teaching and family programs in the morning, and the best in conservative talk radio all day. True Talk, 800 AM.
My name is Mike Jones, and this is a true story. Several years ago, my doctor told me I should have my colon scoped. I can't say I was excited about a 5-foot tube going through my insides, but hey, I was in my 50s at the time, so I did it. My colon turned out to be okay, and afterwards I asked my doctor, "So, when's the last time you had one of these?" He hung his head. He hadn't. Tragically, last year, my doctor died of colon cancer. Did you know if you're over age 50, you're at risk for colon cancer too? And if you never had your colon checked because you're afraid of the procedure, I have good news. It's now possible to get a virtual colonoscopy with BodyView's revolutionary new CAT scan. A virtual colonoscopy is still a colonoscopy, but without the invasive scope and no anesthetic either. I just had one at BodyView scanning. It was totally comfortable, took just a few minutes, gave me some peace of mind too. So if you're over 50, younger if you have a family history, call BodyView scanning at 503-653-SCAN for more information. That number again, 503-653-SCAN.
Talk radio with a difference. Mary Starrett. True Talk, 800 AM.
Welcome back. All this week here on True Talk, 800 AM, we've been focusing on issues that affect women incarcerated in Oregon. As we've mentioned, there are 672 women in the women's prison, the only women's prison, and it's in Wilsonville. It's called Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. This week we focused on something called custodial rape, where we found out that Oregon is one of only four states where there is no law that says that an inmate has recourse if a Department of Corrections employee attacks her sexually. We know that one woman that we talked to earlier this week was raped repeatedly in 1997 by a man who is still employed by the Department of Corrections. Countless phone calls to the Marion County DA to alert them not only of this man's name, but of this particular crime have gone, well, I guess you could say, ignored. If a crime is committed against a woman who's an inmate, I'm assuming that our assumption is these women are not worthy of protection. We talked yesterday about when battered women kill. We talked about the profile of the battered woman. Today we highlighted one particular case, a woman named Suzanne Miles, a mother of three, who after being on the antidepressant Paxil, shot her husband and now is serving 25 years in the women's prison. We heard from Dr. Bregan, who is the preeminent expert on this, and we also talked to an attorney. Right now, I'd like to introduce a special correspondent for Justice Denied, the magazine for the wrongly convicted. There's a man here who has created the world's largest database of wrongly convicted people. You can go to their website if you want to check it out. It's justicedenied.org. He's currently writing a book about how and why wrongful convictions occur, and he's a staff member of Prison Legal News magazine. Joining us now, Hans Scherer. Hans, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Mary.
Boy, real tough case, real heartbreaking case, Suzanne Miles. How did you first become aware of her situation?
Well, in June, a letter was received at Prison Legal News' office from Suzanne in which she briefly described her situation and she asked for help. She wrote, what caught my eye in reading her letter was what she wrote about the rejection of her motion by the judge about allowing the introduction of evidence that the Pepaxil use induced, you know, suicidal thoughts and caused her to uncharacteristically act violently. Now, the judge's reaction to that is what caught my eye. I mean, I've read hundreds and hundreds, actually thousands of cases of wrongly convicted people and other cases, criminal cases, and the judge described the side effects of Paxil as junk science. Now, in the Donald Shell case in Wyoming, Mr. Shell took Paxil, two Paxil tablets, and within 24 hours, he killed his family and committed suicide. His survivors sued GlaxoSmithKline, and in June of last year, 2001, a federal jury in Wyoming awarded them $8 million. Well, Suzanne's judge dismissed the finding of federal court as junk science. Well, that struck me as extraordinary for four reasons. First, judges are always looking for the easy way out, and particularly a state county judge, you know, it would provide an airtight, you know, easy way out for him to just go along with this federal court decision. Excuse me. It also struck me as extraordinary because the judge could have simply denied her motion, you know, without any comment, which judges commonly do. But the judge went out of his way to sneer at the federal court finding by calling it junk science. Now, of the thousands of cases I've read, I have never come across a county state judge sneering at a federal court decision. So, it was the judge's comment that aroused my curiosity about Suzanne's case, and so I wrote her and asked her to describe what happened only using information that was available in the official record of her case. And at the same time, I started doing research on Paxil on the internet and by going to the library. And what I found was that there's a extremely large amount of information, scientific, medical, legal, and experiential, that Paxil causes suicidal impulses in otherwise stable people, and that it causes otherwise nonviolent people to act violently.
So the fact that the judge would dismiss this and actually disparage this whole concept by calling it junk science is ludicrous on the face of the published information, the reams of it that you found are out there.
Well, as Dr. Bragan just mentioned, the Supreme Court established, it's called the Daubert case, in which it's determined whether something is scientific or not. And as he pointed out, in the federal case that he was involved in there, the judge specifically ruled that it met the Daubert standard. In other words, the side effects of Paxil are so well known that they are, in fact, our science.
That's amazing to me that here we have a judge who not only, as you point out, says, we're not going to let you admit this, but then to go ahead and to call it something that, you know, fact is fact, and the proof is there.
Well,
now what about the fact that she had blood tests taken at the time? Couldn't they have seen she had Paxil in her bloodstream and then used that? Or what was it about when they took the blood and said, "We don't have any more. We can't test it"?
Well, after I received quite a long letter back from Suzanne in which she described her, you know, what had happened, you know, the events leading up to the day when her husband was shot by her, what happened that day, what happened afterwards. And in looking at what she wrote, compared with what I had profound about how people react on Paxil. They match perfectly. And her behavior that day and the days leading up to it were also testified to at her trial by different people, her children, I think some friends and acquaintances, perhaps people she worked with. Although the judge didn't consider the possible side effects of Paxil as a defense, these people still testified to how she was acting. Now, after I, you know, kind of reviewed the information I gathered, reviewed what Suzanne had told me, I started noticing that there was other inconsistencies in her case, and one of the biggies does revolve around this issue of the blood. They took two vials of blood, and supposedly, that the prosecutor alleges that the blood test did not detect any Paxil in her system, even though, based on what Dr. Bregan just said, it should have shown up. And from what Suzanne says, I don't want to disparage the memory of her dead husband, but this is a matter of public record. He was a daily user of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the prosecutor, after claiming that no Paxil was in her system, claimed that there was no marijuana detectable in his blood. Now, marijuana remains detectable in your blood for 27 days. So, it would appear that there...
Inconsistency would be a kind way of describing it. Let's break here. Let's break here. Yeah, I mean, this is major league inconsistency. This kind of borders on, hey, something's wrong here. All right, let's take a short break and then come back on True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sarah. Our guest is a special correspondent for Justice Denied, the magazine for the wrongly convicted. He also has the world's largest database of wrongly convicted people. Go to the website, justicedenied.org, if you'd like to find out more about it. Han Scherer continues with us when we come back. So do stay with us. I'm Mary Sarah.
On eHarmony.com.
eHarmony changed my life because I never would have met Tom otherwise.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. You may have heard Tom and Becky interviewed on Focus on the Family recently. They're just one of several hundred couples who have found their soulmate through eHarmony. What they have is so special. It's so hard to find the right person to marry and then build a lasting relationship. At eHarmony.com, we're committed to coming alongside you, and we can make it so much easier to fall in love for the rest of your life. Here's what I want you to do. Go to eHarmony.com and log on today. We will give you a free, eye-opening personality profile right there online, and then we'll be well on our way to helping you, like Tom and Becky, fall in love for all the right reasons.
I found the absolute dream of my life on eHarmony.com.
You know, I'm not a genius about money. I love my credit, and it loves me. I found the more I charged, the more credit they gave me. And then it got out of hand. One of my creditors threatened to sue me. I figured I had a problem, and I didn't know how to deal with it. But then I lucked out. I heard about Trinity Debt Management, so I called and talked to a counselor. In half an hour, we worked out a plan. Now I've got one manageable monthly payment, a lower interest rate, and I'm getting out of debt. Thanks, Trinity.
Keep more of what you make. It's for your family's sake. Trinity.
Trinity, nonprofit debt management.
We should talk.
Call 1-800-758-3844. 800-758-3844 or visit trinitycredit.org.
True Talk. Listen for In Touch with Charles Stanley weeknights at 9:30 on True Talk 800 AM.
KPDQ is found an electric company that we're proud to have on the air, announcing one of the newest members to our KPDQ family of advertisers, Timothy Paul and crew of Well Done Electric. Well Done Electric services both commercial and residential customers in design and installation during remodeling and new construction. What this means to you is that you won't have to hire several different electrical contractors to complete any kind of electrical need you might have. For instance, if you work from home, you probably need to put in digital high-speed computer lines and have digital dish and regular TV options. In most cases, you'll save around $2,000 for an average-size home because Well Done Electric is capable of doing the whole project. Call them at 503-209-4006 for a free estimate and have the capability to receive new innovative technology now and in the future. Call Well Done Electric, 503-209-4006.
Not for the faint of heart, The Mary Sarrett Show. True Talk, 800 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sarrett. This week we've been focusing on women's prison issues. And today talked with a woman named Suzanne Miles, who's been convicted of murder. She was on the antidepressant Paxil for somewhere between 11 and 14 days. And based on that, says that is what led her to the violence that resulted in her husband's death. She's now in prison and here in Wilsonville. And she will be for 25 years unless somebody gets the information to the powers that be that she's not alone in the reaction she had to this drug. Joining us now is Hans Scherer. He's a special correspondent for Justice Denied, the magazine for the wrongly convicted, and their website, once again, justicedenied.org. Following this case, Hans, you say that the judge finding her guilty of murder instead of manslaughter is also an element. How so?
Well, see, I'm looking at it from the standpoint that Suzanne is completely innocent of committing any crime. She was under the effect of a prescription drug that has known mind-altering side effects, and every way that she's used to describe her conduct and that other people have described her conduct at the time she shot her husband is consistent with her being on Paxil and under its effects. Now, you have to have a mental element to commit criminal homicide. In fact, I'll read it right from the Oregon Revised Statute. Quote, a person commits criminal homicide if without justification or excuse the person intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with criminal negligence causes the death of another human being. Well, obviously, she did not commit criminal homicide, which covers murder and manslaughter, because she was under the effects of a FDA-approved prescription drug. Now, the judge's ruling only protected one entity, and that was GlaxoSmithKline. Because if he'd ruled that she could present the defense that she was under the effects of Paxil and she'd been acquitted, she would have been able to sue GlaxoSmithKline for multi-millions for the wrongful death of her husband and her her children still can probably do so, even though she's been convicted.
So what happens now? We just heard from a psychiatrist. We just heard from an attorney who deals with these cases, and they both said, listen, without the money to fund these defenses, you're out of luck.
Well, unfortunately, that is, in fact, the case. When you look, weekly, at a minimum weekly, you can read in the paper of people all across the country who are exonerated from major felonies, typically murder, and always there is major law firms or legal teams behind their exoneration. In I think that for Suzanne to prevail, there will have to be some sort of a defense fund set up, and that some nationally recognized organizations will have to become interested in her case, and which I think could be done because of the special circumstances of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand that people typically are have their convictions reversed when they receive a lot of publicity.
Yes.
Because if there's no publicity, then the appeals courts can simply make whatever decision they want, and no one ever knows about it. But if there's publicity that highlights the injustice of a situation, then they're almost back in the corner of doing the right thing. And so I think that the attention that's being focused on Suzanne's case on your program to begin with, and perhaps through other media later, will be a benefit to her, because that, in fact, is how people are exonerated of being wrongfully convicted, which I think she was. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Suzanne Miles is innocent, that it's the crime, the criminals in her case, in my mind, and this may sound blunt, are the judge and the prosecutor. Because there was funny business, and there may still be going on funny business related to these blood samples. My personal opinion is that there are blood samples of Suzanne still in existence, and they're being concealed by the prosecutor, because they can be used by her to her advantage.
This does not paint a picture that would engender confidence in our legal system.
Well, you have to remember, Mary, that she was prosecuted in Marion County by the same prosecutor who now, at least to date, has used his position to protect an accused serial rapist that you have brought out on your program this week. The same prosecutor. So we already know that, you know, he's not what you call a particularly upstanding person, regardless of the, you know, the appearance that he is simply because of the position that he holds.
Well, this is, you know, this goes
it's,
to...
In other words, if somebody's going to use his position to protect an accused serial rapist, they'll most certainly use their position to prosecute a woman that they know is innocent. Because I'm sure that he got a lot of positive publicity out of it in the paper at the time, you know, this crazed soccer mom, she's husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, if you get a conviction, you can look around and say, look at what I've done. Justice has been served here.
And I will be writing a story about Suzanne that will appear in an upcoming issue of Justice Denied. I mean, the cases of wrongful conviction are so outrageous. I just finished a story yesterday that will appear in the next issue on three people, I call them the Choctaw Three in Choctaw County, Alabama, who were convicted, they were indicted for the capital murder of a baby that never existed.
Mm.
And this baby only exists in the mind of the prosecutor. And is that more outrageous than what happened to Suzanne? Well, possibly, because these people were facing the electric chair for the murder of a non-existent baby. And one of them, the man involved in the case, just had his conviction reversed by the Alabama Court of Appeals last month. They called it a manifest injustice for someone to be convicted of murdering a baby that never existed. And I guess, you know, if I say what I hope to see in Suzanne's case is that someday, hopefully sooner than later, there will be a similar ruling in Oregon related to the outrageous injustice that's been committed against her. Because, you know, and when the staff members there at Coffee Creek, you know, when they peep on, well, let's see, I don't want to get that. When they deal with her, you know, they're dealing with someone who shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone just like their mother, just like their sister, just like their aunt, just like their grandmother. And that's the way she should be treated. Because she shouldn't be there. It's just a matter. matter of the circumstances of her case. And it shows, just as you've been emphasizing, that anyone at any time can find themselves in a similar situation. I mean, she simply used a prescription drug, which people use every day, and she had a susceptibility to its negative side effects.
And for that, she got 25 years of her life pretty much shaved off. Well, we're going to continue to focus on this case and tomorrow deal with medical neglect, deal with the food, deal with some other issues. Hans, I appreciate your being with us and appreciate the work that you're doing, justicedenied.org. All righty. Well, we're out of time for today. But tomorrow we'll be back again talking about these issues. And I hope you'll find time to join us here on True Talk 800 AM.
I am here, and I am here for such a time.